We're back with more of Lake Effect on 89.7 WUWM. I'm Bonnie North.
And I'm Mitch Tyke. 1968 was a pivotal year for so many facets of American culture, from the anti-war and civil rights movements to rapidly changing musical styles to women's rights. It was also a time of great change in America's gay society.
While Stonewall didn't happen until a year later, 1968 was a crucial year in Milwaukee's gay history, especially in Walker's Point. Pride Month starts today, and we asked writer and historian Michael Takash to come in to tell us more.
1968 is very pivotal, and we are celebrating this golden anniversary this year of a year in which two very important things happened in Milwaukee that still inspire and influence us to this day. The first was the opening of This Is It, which is still standing at West Wells and Jefferson, which is celebrating its 50th anniversary this summer. But also, 1968 was the year that gay bars actually started flocking to Walker's Point and actually formed a neighborhood for LGBT people that had not been seen since the first, shall we say, gayborhood in the 400 North Plankinton block was demolished for 794 in the mid-1960s. So for quite a few years, there was nothing. These bars were destroyed. People were kind of distributed to the wind. But in 1968, a local businessman opened a bar at 181 South 2nd Street that had formerly been a bit of a go-go bar, a little bit racy, a little bit scandalous. And although he was not the first in the neighborhood, his arrival with the bar, The Rooster, actually sparked a whole migration and centralization of gay bars and gay businesses in the 100 South 2nd Street block of Walker's Point in a way that had never been seen before.
Why do you think Walker's Point was such a welcoming place? Or was it welcoming? Did people just show up?
Well, the Walker's Point that we envision today of tapas restaurants, wine bars, exotic chocolate shops was not the Walker's Point of the late 1960s. But it's interesting that in 1968, 50 years ago, we just really have this, rust belt, kind of haunted looking, abandoned businesses, just all sitting there waiting to be discovered. And so in these areas of town where people no longer went, it was very easy for businesses to open that only were found by the people that they wanted to find them.
So in a way, it was a safe place to be.
I don't know how safe it was. I mean, there was still, certainly Milwaukee was a bit more supportive, if not tolerant, city for LGBT people going back to all the way back to the 1920s. I don't know how safe it really was. There was still a lot of discrimination, obviously. There was still a lot of harassment. And certainly if somebody was, found to be in one of these spaces or found to be, holding hands or dancing or even sitting on a bar stool next to another person of the same gender, they could be arrested. They could be brutalized. In one celebrated case, they could even be murdered. And nothing would be done about it.
Was homosexuality illegal in Milwaukee at that time?
Technically, it was not illegal, but bars were not allowed to serve homosexuals. So around the country, this was very common. A tavern owner could reject services to somebody simply because they were gay or because they were perceived to be gay, even stranger, right? I mean, walking into a bar, the business owner would make a snap decision on whether or not they could serve you. And that's why these special safe places needed to exist. Once you were inside, certainly they were safe to an extent. But, walking around Walker's Point at night, moving from bar to bar on foot was probably not what most people did. So the idea that in 1959, which is unbelievable, right? Like six decades ago, the first LGBT bar would open in Walker's Point at 901 West National is kind of unthinkable. I mean, you really think about this neighborhood and, just being so industrial and so kind of like a workspace for Milwaukee, not really a play space. But as the work moved out, the play moved in, and the Nightbeat was really the first bar at 901 West National to cater to the LGBT community. It was strictly a women's bar. It was very, I guess the word that some contributors to the Wisconsin LGBT History Project have used is that it was a diesel bar. It was for women who were very tough. They knew what they liked, and they went there to find other women like themselves. And the bar owners created an environment where they could do that safely. It was not a bar that welcomed men. It was not a bar that welcomed women who wore makeup. But it was very popular. And from 1959 1963, it operated on 9th and National and then moved over to 2nd and Pittsburgh, which is actually, you know, when I say that 1968 is a pivotal year, there were traces of gay history happening in Walker's Point. But in 1968, they got a neighbor, and that neighbor was very popular.
All right. So 68 being, as you say, a pivotal year. And as we said at the beginning, 69 was a pivotal year nationally because that's when Stonewall happened. And for people who don't know, tell me the history quickly of the Stonewall.
Exactly. So the Stonewall Bar in New York's Greenwich Village had been operated by the mafia, and the mafia had taken cuts and kind of gotten some police protection. Well, that kind of fell apart, and the police took it out on the patrons and started harassing the patrons, harassing the staff. And it just got ugly and more violent, and things just escalated till one night when, you know, the community really came together and fought back. And it was the first uprising that achieved national attention, if not international attention, within the LGBT community. That was not the first uprising, certainly. The Black Cat Riot of Los Angeles was actually several years earlier, and even here in Milwaukee, much earlier, in 1961, there was a riot at a bar called the Black Knight, where some gentlemen came in and thought that they were going to come beat up some queers, were their words. They actually used that in the paper. That was their reason for coming to the bar, to start fights and beat people up. And the bar fought back. The bar was packed with 70 people on a Saturday night, and it fought back. And these guys like wound up in like intensive care for weeks. So there's really this simmering sentiment by, like, you know, the mid, certainly, and late, definitely, 60s, that people were not going to put up with being marginalized anymore. They were not going to put up with being brutalized. They were not going to be harassed anymore. They're not going to be chased, stalked, name-called. Like, they were really going to come out and just be like, you know, come at me. Bring it.
Has Walker's Point stayed the gayborhood in Milwaukee in these past 50 years, or has that changed? Have people found other neighborhoods that are equally welcoming?
You know, that's an interesting question. So when I was doing my research for the book LGBT Milwaukee, you know, it was interesting to me that the earliest gay bars in Milwaukee were kind of scattered. They were decentralized. They were all over town. I mean, there was one on North Green Bay Road in the 1960s. There was one on 20th and North. I mean, they were just literally all over the city. And it was hard to find them. There was no internet. There was no gay media. I mean, there was really no way of finding these places unless you knew somebody who knew somebody and they could get you in. Because, of course, they were not open to the public. Like, you couldn't just walk in. You had to, like, get in. So what's interesting about the story, really, is that, you know, in 1968, we start to see the forming of the second neighborhood of bars, which the freeway 794 sought to, like, decimate. It was like that block was known by the police, and the police in particular, one police officer harassed that block for most of his career. So when it was torn down, there was this hush of relief that, you know, the gay neighborhood was gone. And I don't think, you know, today's gay and lesbian people even know that there was ever a gay neighborhood there because it's a freeway off-ramp at Plankinton Avenue. So the idea of, like, having a neighborhood, having a collective place where you could go from bar to bar and see who was there or go to the neighborhood for the whole evening and, you know, bar hop, really didn't exist after the first neighborhood was destroyed. So in 1968, when the Nightbeat was joined by the Rooster across the street, it really created this sense of, okay, maybe there's something here. And then the next year, the Castaways Bar moved to the former Nightbeat place. Nightbeat moved across the street next to the Rooster. And now we had three bars on one intersection. The next year, a bar opened called the Seaway, which had migrated from Jefferson and Mason across the street from the Pfister. I mean, talk about like prime real estate, right? And now we had four bars on the same block. And then a restaurant opened in between what is the Rooster and the Seaway called the Night Owl. So then we had five businesses on the same block. This just kept happening. This just kept spiraling. And then bars started opening on the 200 South block of South 2nd Street. And by 1974, there were eight bars in two blocks, and there was a real neighborhood. And I just think that's fascinating. And then bars started spilling around the corner onto 1st Street, and then they started spilling into the 3rd Ward, and then they continued to push south. What I think is interesting is that the first bar in the southern part of Walker's Point, which we think of as traditional Walker's Point, you know, the clock tower, Second and National, the first bar in that area was actually Your Place. And Your Place opened in 1965, I believe. And it was opened by a Hungarian family, a gentleman named Jim Dorn and his partner. And Jim Dorn's parents opened this bar and lived above it. So it was kind of like a gay bar that was also family owned and operated, which was unheard of at the time. But it all started at that corner of 2nd and Pittsburgh in 1968 when, you know, people saw that, you know, they saw themselves reflected in the world. They saw businesses that were welcoming and accepting. They saw that they too could have a neighborhood for them. And they just kept coming and nothing could keep them away. And then more and more businesses came to tap into that. And then finally we had, you know, Walker's Point exploding with multiple bars and businesses continuing to this day.
Well, one of the ways you are marking this golden anniversary, you're having an event, but the event is really a way to collect more history. And so what are you asking people to do?
So one of the ways that we continue this research and one of the things that my book has funded is just continuous exploration, discovery, and crowdsourcing of rare historical content. Most of this content, you have to understand, is verbal. It's storytelling. People did not take cameras to bars before, you know, I was a teenager. So like by the 1980s, it was still uncommon to see people taking lots and lots of photos in bars unless they're at maybe a show or they were a drag performer. So the Wisconsin LGBT History Project website is really our repository. That's where we put the content that we harness, the stories that we write, the pictures we collect. But the collection process actually happens two ways. One is online through a History of Gay Milwaukee Facebook group, which was started by Jamie Taylor several years ago. It's a way of collecting photos. We've gotten T-shirts from bars, and we've gotten matchbook covers, party flyers, an array of pictures from people, you know, private parties at people's homes. And it's really awesome because these parties bring people together. They start telling stories. And this all just kind of flows naturally. And then people just really open up. And it's great because they might not do that, you know, online, and they might not feel comfortable doing that over the phone or in an interview setting like this one. But in a group of friends where they're just kind of doing like an open mic spoken word, you wouldn't believe the things we got. A year ago, we did a party at the former Fanny's, which is on Barclay in the southern end of Walker's Point, which was a women's bar for a long, long time. And we had over 200 women show up for this Remember When party. And the open mic session went for about 90 minutes with people just stepping up and sharing their stories. The first time they went to a gay bar, the first time they went on a date, what it was like to tell their parents they were gay, how they figured out they were gay in the 1960s, coming downtown and, you know, avoiding the police, or in some cases, being supported by the police when somebody was harassing them. I mean, just really incredible stuff that way, way before my time. But all of that could be lost very quickly and easily if we don't start documenting it.
So you're recording these. People are willing to talk in the open mics, and they are being recorded for posterity.
Yeah. So that's really the mission and purpose here, ultimately, of the Wisconsin LGBT History Project, which is affiliated with Milwaukee Pride, is to celebrate, document, and preserve this history because no one else is.
So what are you hoping to get from this particular event that you don't already have? Are you hoping to find out more about Walker's Point in 1968 or just personal stories?
We always see these Remember When parties as an opportunity to close some of the loose ends and the gaps in our collective history and knowledge. But this one is really special because, again, we're celebrating the 50th anniversary of a bar that opened and kind of triggered a revolution before a national revolution even started. And, you know, to think that Al Berry, who was the founder of the Rooster, would buy this bar as a, you know, heterosexual husband, father, businessman, and would open this bar and create this space for people who at that time were kind of marginalized because their neighborhood had been flattened by the freeway steamrollers. We're really celebrating him and his decision to do that because, you know, honestly, I don't know that we would have the LGBT Walker's Point we have today had that linchpin not happened. It was kind of a domino effect. So we're first and foremost celebrating that. Second, bringing people together to talk about their memories of that bar, that block, that point in time. There are a great number of people, fortunately, still in Milwaukee from that period, from the late 60s, early 70s, who come together and share their memories and eventually start unearthing some things that we really didn't even know about. As I mentioned earlier, last year at the women's event at the former Fanny's, we discovered a bar that no one had ever heard of. And it wasn't listed anywhere in any documentation, any gay guides of the era, any gay press of the era. And we're still trying to dig into that one to find out where it was, who owned it, and what its story was. But that's the fun of this job, really. And this is a, you know, not a full-time job for me, but a volunteer labor of love, is discovering all of these, you know, points of interest and then digging deeper into them and then bringing the story alive for the rest of the city.
Michael Takash is a writer and historian. You can find more information about the Wisconsin LGBT History Project at WUWM.com.